My guest is writer Patricia Highsmith, whose psychological thrillers have brought her a wide following in Europe and a cult following in America. Highsmith was born in Texas in 1921, but moved to Europe in 1963. She's written 19 novels and 6 collections of short stories. Like most of her previous books, her new novel, Found in the Street, begins with a coincidence that has lasting repercussions. In this case, a paranoid loner in Greenwich Village finds the wallet of a young married illustrator. He returns the wallet and won't stay out of the artist's life. Patricia Highsmith is best known for her first novel, Strangers on a Train, which Alfred Hitchcock made into a movie in 1951. I spoke to Highsmith when she visited New York this week, and she told me how Hitchcock first learned of her book.
I was then living in New York, and my agent was in New York, and it's customary to send a couple of copies of books to Hollywood so that potential filmmakers have a chance to take a look at it. And I think Hitchcock is... I know he was very fond of trains, and so he took a fancy to this one, and it was bought quickly by him.
Did he tell you what themes most interested him in your novel?
No, not at all, because, in fact, I never met him, and he was working then in California. But he did ring me up once during his work, and he said he'd had the second murder, which, of course, he finally did. It frequently happens in my books that what I can do in the way of words to show the internal workings of a person's mind cannot be done in film, and that's what happened in this case.
In John Russell Taylor's biography of Alfred Hitchcock, Taylor wrote that Hitchcock paid $2,000 for the screen rights to your novel.
That's not true.
And he also said, and you could tell me if this is true, Taylor also wrote that Hitchcock said to you, you should actually pay me for making it because it's really going to have a great effect on your career. Is that true?
No. Actually, he paid me $7,500, of which my agent took 10%. And I never had such a personal conversation with Mr. Hitchcock, as to say it would help my career. But in fact, it did. It did help my career, and at once. And at that point, I was, I think I was 28 when the thing was sold, or 29 or something. It did definitely help my career, there's no doubt.
In your latest book, Found in the Street, there's a theme that was also present in your first novel, Strangers on a Train. And I'm thinking of the fact that there are two male characters in each of those books, who are, in a way, doubles of each other, but one is a less successful, slightly deranged twin of the other. What interests you in that idea of the psychological double?
Well, in the case of Strangers on a Train, it's more clear to me that those two men were much bound up by the fact that there was a murder or potential murder. I don't know, I don't consider them twins, but there is maybe a possibility of crime in some people. I don't really believe that everybody can murder. But, and then in my present book, I mean, Found in the Street, it's not so much that they're opposite, these men, but that they focus on the one pretty girl, the girl aged 20, who is very eye-catching. And if the book has a theme, it is that the people in love always attribute virtues and charm and talent even to the person they're in love with, perhaps the person is quite empty and hasn't got these things at all. So this girl in my book is so young that they can imagine that she may have these talents and the potentiality. Both of the men believe this about the girl. That's what binds them together in the book.
The Atlantic Monthly Press is bringing out new editions of several of your books. Do you think that your books are being seen in a different light now or reevaluated?
No, I'm not sure about that at all. I do know that I had difficulty in America with publishers because from time to time I write quite a few short stories, and my fifth book of short stories is coming out very soon in England, but the American publishers think that short stories do not make any money, and consequently they reject me. Then I have to look for another publisher who either does the short story book or I have to forget it and write a novel to please them. So the result is that I've had something like five American publishers, which I don't like because it sounds as if I'm disloyal.
I read somewhere that before you started writing novels that you wrote comic books to make a living.
Yes.
What kind?
They were with running characters. One of them was called the Black Terror. So my job was to sit there. It's something like turning out two grade B films per day. You simply think of a plot concerning the certain characters, and then you type it at great speed. It was terribly easy to write.
How did you get the job?
I answered an ad in the newspaper. I was 22, I think. And, of course, I had to earn my living. I had a small apartment. So the advertisement was Reporter Rewrite, and I thought it was probably a newspaper of some kind. So I walked into a comic office. So I said, well, I'm just out of college and blah, blah, blah. And so I had the job in about 20 minutes. And then, of course, I had to learn it. One has to learn it as if it were a craft. It's like putting heels on shoes. You have to, working in leather, I mean, you have to learn it. So that takes a couple of days because it has very little to do with writing or with poetry or anything personal. It was not at all personal to me. You just manufacture stories for these comic books.
I could see how that kind of work, even if it's like putting heels on shoes, could actually be really liberating for a writer because since it's not poetry, you don't have to sit there worrying about every word and you just force yourself to just churn it out, which might actually free you up, get you to know that you can just sit down and write when you have to.
That's true, yes. I was lucky, I think, in getting that.
I think a lot of women writers started out writing for magazines like True Confessions or for women's magazines. Did you ever go any of those routes? Because I think those publications were probably more open to women than the comics or the pulps were.
Well, yes, but I associate them with love affairs. And first of all, I'm terribly shy about writing about love affairs, and I can't take it all that seriously. And then the prudishness, when I was in my early 20s, that it was just too much. I think I had two sales of short stories to the Sleeks, which paid about $800 and a fortune in those days. But you've got to clean it up. I mean, they've got to be married before they possibly jump into bed together. I mean, all this is just, it's so phony. I mean, it didn't interest me to do that. It's better to work with the comics than to do that, I think.
You've written that although it's very important to spend a lot of time writing, it's perhaps equally important to spend some time not writing and to spend some time where you're just letting your mind roam and daydream.
That's very true, yes. That's my recipe for success. But I can mainly do it at home. There's always something in my house, or I take a walk, or I do something in a garden, if I have one, a small garden.
Is that the key to daydreaming, to be involved with your body and doing something, but have your mind be free to roam?
Yes, that's my idea of daydreaming.
And do your novels usually come to you in one of those daydreams, the story?
Yes, very definitely. Novel idea or a short story idea or something funny. They come when I'm not trying to think hard about getting an idea.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Patricia Highsmith's new novel, Found in the Street, is published by the Atlantic Monthly Press. This spring, Atlantic Monthly Press will reissue her novels A Game for the Living and The Two Faces of January.